It is time to bring in Tim, Luke, and Greg Strom, the appraisal guys, the frickin' frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This. Of course, you can find them on the web, tqag.com, or right here on a Tuesday morning. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good morning from Texas.
Now, you're in Texas, and are you in Texas? Are you both there, or are you split again?
No, I'm in Florida.
I'm in San Antonio.
And I'm in Hope Sound.
well, so now you've got probably 70 degrees where you are, Greg, right?
Oh, yes. Closer to about 78 right now and sunny. And Tim, very calm.
All right, Tim, what about you?
We are at 80 and a lot of humidity. And I will tell you, even yesterday, I'm on an appraisal job and I left the job site, the building that I was in, at about 7 o'clock at night and walked back to the hotel because it's about a block and a half away. And even at 7 o'clock, it was really hot and humid. I just get me back to the hotel and air conditioning.
I have to be the first one to admit that I absolutely love this weather we're having here in Florida. The heat and the humidity, you know, coming from Ohio, growing up, I mean, in the summertime, that's what it was all about, getting out of school. And, you know, it was the summertime. You go to the swimming pool. It was hot and humid. And I'm just so used to it that it's my favorite time of the year. And I don't mind the heat and the humidity at all.
It's not a matter of like or dislike. It's also with my asthma, I just
couldn't breathe. It's an issue. I know it's an issue if you have asthma. But
yeah. Just walking all and breathing.
Tell you is I just hate winter, and the hotter and the more humid it is, I don't care.
Right.
Thank you. No. You took the words right out of my mouth. Yeah.
That's why
we live with it.
That's why God created air conditioning. That's right.
Amen, yeah. Brother. Amen.
All right. So now, what are we going to talk about? I mean,
we've got a lot to talk about. Let me tell you. So I'm on this big job and this is an estate appraisal. And the reason that I'm bringing this up, and we've talked about estate appraisals before, but this is the importance of an independent appraisal, and we've talked a lot about USPAP, the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice. I'm an instructor, certified AQB, certified USPAP instructor, and that is it's getting more and more affirmation. And I bring this up because just last, I think it was last week, or the week before, I think it was last week, it was the U.S. Tax Court. It was the Ninth Circuit Court agreed with the U.S. Tax Court. There was a case that came up, and it was having to do with Sotheby's. They say in the article, a prominent auction house. Well, it was Sotheby's. They did the appraisal of a piece for estate purposes. And then a year or two later, sells the piece for, you know, a lot of money. Now, the whole thing here to understand is that when you do USPAP, it has to be independent. If you have an interest in the piece, there's a possibility of a bias, but you have to make sure that you're saying, we're going to do this independently, let the client know that. We're going to look at comparables in the marketplace. The big thing that Sotheby's lacked in the reason that the whole case sided for the IRS, for the tax court, is that the appraiser at Sotheby's downgraded the condition severely on the piece and estimated the item for fair market value at $600,000. And then 2 years later, I think it was, sells for almost $3 million, which... big disparity there. So when they had an independent appraiser come in, utilizing the steps and methodology of USPAP, specifically using comparables in the marketplace. So what we do is look at items that are selling right now, or have sold as of the date of death. So whenever the date of death was, if there were things selling in the marketplace at 1.3 million, 2 million, 1 million, 1.2 million, you know that it's got to be above $1 million. It's not just 600,000. So there was a discrepancy there, and that wherever the comparables were, and I'm not familiar with the case enough to say what the comparables were. I am familiar with what the outcome was. The outcome is significant, and it's about what Greg and I do when we go into an estate situation, and that's what I'm dealing with right now, is where's the marketplace at this point? And the funny thing is that you may think, oh, this doesn't have a tremendous amount of value. Oh, no. But you have to look, and that's what we do as professionals, is look at the marketplace. And if Sotheby's had taken the time and I'm setting Greg up for his favorite quote, is if they had taken the time to do this, they just put estimates on it, and there's an inference that you get by looking at this is that they were doing a low estimate, and this is my opinion. I don't know what happened. It is, but reading between the lines is that they put a lower estimate on it in order to get the piece for auction and get a signed agreement. And I think there was a contingency. If I look back at the case, there was some contingency in there, is that we'll do your estate appraisal if you sign off on having us sell this in a year or two. And that you can't do that if you're an independent appraiser. You can't say, well, we'll do this if not. There's a contingency there. And that was the other linchpin, I think, in this whole thing. And the Appraisal Foundation did put out a press release about this. And it is really, it's the second time that the U.S. courts have affirmed and sided with the methodology of the Uniform Standards of Professional Appraisal Practice. And that has been in existence since the late 1980s, started in the late 70s to come together. And it is overseen by Congress. So there's a lot of checks and balances in this. And this is why we teach this. This is why we get this out there to as many appraisal professionals as possible. And I encourage as many of the appraisal professionals that are out there to make sure that you're up on your USPAP classes and keep going back to continuing education. Because if something does happen, it's there to help you. And that's what I think that, well, this whole thing.
The other thing needs to be brought up, and we've talked about this in the past, how there was a time, which still exists to some degree, for us as professional appraisers, people have the belief that, well, we're not professionals. We don't. This is something that we just do after dinner,
or as a hobby.
As a hobby, and it's nothing. And I, what he's talking about, my favorite quote, and it really is apropos here, and that is, the circuit court ruling actually reaffirms that we as appraisers are no longer the redheaded stepchild at the family picnic. We are indeed professionals who have to have professional credentials, and how we achieve those credentials is what USPAP is all about. It kind of sets guidelines for how an appraisal should be put together. And if you belong to a professional organization, as some of the previous court cases have requested, when you go into court, the first thing the judge will ask is, what makes you a professional appraiser? Why are you an appraiser? Where's your education and background that makes you an appraiser? Not being a dealer, does that make you, you know, being a dealer, does that make you more of a professional appraiser than someone who hasn't taken a class, or right. Just because you are a dealer, are you considered an appraiser? And the answer is no, you're not.
Well, no, but Greg, that also gives, you know, it gives education in the market as a dealer. That's wonderful, but you do need to know the methodologies, and that's what USPAP is really there for. It also means that wealth managers, estate attorneys, trust officers, they have a greater fiduciary duty to their client, and to really fully understand what the appraiser qualifications criteria and appraisal standards, what that stands for, because they have to look out for their client's best interest too. So if you are hiring an appraiser, make sure that you ask about, are they USPAP compliant? When was the last time they took the class? Are they doing continuing education? Because one of the things that's coming up, and USPAP updates every 2 years, and it does this in order to stay current with what's going on in the marketplace and in society. And I think with this,
and also with tax, and also with tax law, because
tax law. No, absolutely tax law. But in the upcoming, there's an update in 2020, and one of the big things in the update is that a USPAP is stating that you cannot just rest on the class you took 10 years ago and say, I'm still an appraiser. I've been appraising and I keep doing appraisals. Well, are you going back to class? Are you learning about what's new in the marketplace and coming up? What other methodologies are out there? That's what USPAP really wants you as a professional to do. And I think that pays off then to the users of appraisal services and appraisers, like attorneys and tax accountants and fiduciary trust people, insurance companies, and the general public, so that when we do an appraisal, it is objective. And, you know, I will tell you that even just with, in the last couple of weeks, a couple of appraisals that I did for insurance, the people came back, they said, oh, I forgot to tell you this about the piece. And I said, well, yeah, that makes a big difference. Let me reconsider this. You know, appraisers, we will consider anything, but in our analysis, we will let you know if it makes a difference or not to the overall value. And that's the big takeaway here.
So basically, by having what you're talking about, it's a protector for you, the financial institutions, and even the people that are looking to be appraised. So when something happens that goes awry and it goes into court, everybody knows that you're a professional and that you're not a scam artist.
First,
correct.
Well, that's one. Yes.
That's probably one of the pivotal points. But the one thing that it makes perfectly clear to people, and it should also tip off estate attorneys, and that is the person who signs the report is ultimately responsible. And if you, as a professional appraiser, decide that you are going to just sign your name to something that you haven't really taken
fully the professional research.
Yes, exactly. Then you are going to be held to the highest standards, just like any other professional. So,
and that's what happened in this case. Now, what I want to say is that, you know, not to call the appraiser or Sotheby's a scam artist or anything like that. What happened in this case, auction and auction estimates, that's a very different methodology than appraisal and appraisal values. That's the big difference. And when you walk into court, if there is a problem, you have your methodology to say, here's how I can justify that value. Here's how I arrived at it. The other thing that USPAP states is that perfection is not attainable, but don't make errors, egregious errors, by lack of research in the marketplace. And in this particular case, there was a contingency, and they really did not put comparables for any item. And this is the big thing. Any item over $50,000 is going to get an IRS. They're going to review that, and you better show comparables of how you arrived at anything over $50,000. And for the appraisals that we do, we always include at least three comparables, if not four, to justify, here's why we arrived at this value, especially when you get into something that's above 1,000 or to 1,000,000, is to say, here's why, and here are three things that sold right around this date to justify that's why I'm putting it. And it's the same size, the same medium, the same artist, the same subject matter, or similar subject matter. All of those things come into play when you're looking at comparable sales.
Right, well, people would just take, just very quickly, if people would understand an appraisal of personal property or fine art or anything other than real estate, the process is pretty much the same. When you're set, when you go to buy a house, you look at more than one piece of property that is similar to that house, so that you have an idea of what you are buying and how much you're going to pay. It's no different than selling a Pee Wee Herman doll. If you want to buy it, or you want to sell it and you want to get the best money for it, what you just have to do is find those comparables that are recent, so that you can make an informed, knowledgeable decision on how best to proceed. And if it comes to the point of selling that and someone comes back on you and you haven't done that research and you can't prove that you have that background and that knowledge and that research,
that's
then
the problem.
That's the problem. And that's why the most important, we used to say that the most important thing is to have a qualified appraiser. Well, now that's not enough. You need to have what makes a qualified appraiser. And the most important question really that any attorney or any person hiring an appraiser should ask is, are you USPAP compliant?
All right.
That's probably the top question.
Current.
All right.
Current.
Because some people take it 10 years ago. Anyway, well, sorry for the soapbox. I'm happy that this was in the news and the court affirmed what we're doing.
Right. Well, we are compliant and current, and we're going to wrap things up. Okay.
Got it.
We'll speak to you guys next week.
Okay. Have a great week.
Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. Bye. Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, a freaking frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This.